Hello, ladies, and welcome to episode 57 of the Forest Podcast for Wednesday, January 12th, 2011. And welcome to the Forest Podcast. I am your host, Mike Evans.
And I'm Kenneth Love.
And special guest, Manny.
And we are here to bring you all of the newest sensual news and web development and design. So sit back, open up a bottle, and enjoy, because we're bringing you the hottest of the hotness. I don't know about that.
And that's the show. Can we even follow that with anything?
I don't know. I'm done. See you guys later.
I'm getting so bored. Keep saying the same thing over again.
It's not that I mind you trying to spice it up. That was just horrible.
Well, picture it with the music in the background, though.
Yeah, I know. I am.
Is it new music or is it the same music?
Can you put the music up really loud so we can't hear you during that?
Anyway,
okay.
I'm gonna use
should
that.
We, should we talk?
I'm using that.
Should we talk about the links?
We should talk about the links.
Okay. So the first one is from Mayfield Digital, which is in Edinburgh.
Oh snap!
And apparently, this is just a dude named David Cole. He just likes to call himself
Mayfield. There's no connection at all.
He wants to lie. Yeah. So anyway, he put up a this is our list post. We haven't had one of these in a while. This is a little web roundup of the best responsive web design examples and resources.
Does that mean it's a list?
It is a list.
Oh no,
to some degree.
A roundup.
We're in trouble.
But no, this is kind of cool. I like this. This is good. He's got some resources for like how to do it yourself. You know, learn the techniques, and then he's got 15 pretty high class examples. Simon Collison's in there. Baker Street Enquirer's in there.
Does he link to Think Vitamin? Because I'm pretty sure they're responsive.
He does.
Design.
Think Vitamin's in there. Ethan Marcotte is in there.
Okay.
You know what? Actually, wait. Ethan posted how to pronounce his name the other day on Twitter, and now I can't remember if it was Marcotte or Marcotte.
Oh no, they linked to that god awful ad font calendar.
I just noticed that. That thing was horrible.
Yeah, the ad font calendar was pathetic. But
I can never use it on my iPhone.
The other stuff.
I mean, it was interesting, but it just ran, oh god, so slow.
Yeah, it was way too slow. But you know, whatever. They linked to Cognition, which is Happy Cog's new blog. And I was reading that today. It's actually really pretty.
Cool.
I like their design there. And we're not going to talk about what it was that I read on there because it wasn't really that interesting.
It's Simon Collison going, where did my pants go? I can't find my pants.
That happens a lot in the web design world. I mean, a lot of people lose their pants.
Yeah.
I've never lost my pants before.
Well, do you even have pants?
Let's go next story.
It's hard to lose.
He's a never nude. That's okay. Manny's a never nude.
Let's talk about this next one. Dev structure.
Oh man.
Dev structure.
DevOps is hard, and we can help.
I'm trying to remember who this is from. Who the hell was this from? This is from a dude that was involved with something.
Mariah Carey.
No, I want to say Stack Overflow, but I think I'm wrong there.
Okay.
He's involved in something cool.
Well, what is it?
I can't remember what it was. So basically what it is it lets you you basically like give it a server, or you get a little server from them, right? A little virtual machine or whatever. You run setup.sh, create an account. They take care of the rest. So then you install your packages, compile stuff from source code, edit your config files. You basically set up the server just like you need it for your project,
uh-huh.
Right? And so then the dev structure server figures out what all you did and creates a readable blueprint, and then you can use that blueprint in Puppet or Chef or in just shell scripts to replicate the environment that you just built.
It's kind of cool.
It's handy. If you're doing a whole lot of deployments, especially if you know how to use something like Puppet or Chef, that'll just build your server for you. Then this is a great thing to have. If you don't know a lot about Chef, I'm pretty sure it's on the Surfing in Kansas blog. It's Django-centric, but he talks about how to set up a server using Chef. So probably be a good
It also guarantees that if you're doing it wrong, you'll do it wrong every single time.
Exactly, which is probably the easiest way to learn, right?
That's right.
Why do I keep fucking up?
Well, it's because you work for Grokker.
Yeah, it's because you're an idiot. So NetEye is apparently way too cool to put a title on their website.
Sons of bastards.
A title on the page. Yeah, whatever.
But it works in IE6, so...
This is cool, though. I like this. This is, you know, the little Ajax activity indicators, the little spinny ones. Yeah. You probably designed a bunch of those, right, Manny?
I have one that I use
for use
time.
With .NET.
For all your .NET stuff?
You know, I don't get to do .NET stuff. My company does. I just do mainly front end.
You use it with all your Flash stuff, right?
Yeah, Flash, and then export to iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do that, a lot of that.
You do a lot of slicing and dicing?
No.
See, that's where the money's at. Sorry, I'm eating a scone that my wife made. So
this is.
What do you mean, like those PSD to HTML?
Yeah, you're Mexican company, right?
Wait, those are run by Mexicans?
Yeah.
Well, it's I didn't know Mexicans could code.
It's all they do. Mexicans are world class programmers.
This is why Manny isn't a programmer.
Yes, I am not a programmer.
This is why Manny's like a project manager or some bullshit term.
What? I'm not a project manager.
He's a project constructor. Right.
Project constructor.
I pick up the Mexicans at the Home Depot and bring them in.
He's a project pointer router. So let's talk about what this is. This is an activity indicator. But the cool thing is, it's not an image. It's a jQuery plugin that generates your spinner for you using SVG or VML, depending on what browser you're working on. With. So this will work in all versions of IE, Opera, Firefox, Safari, Chrome. It probably works in Netscape. I mean, it'll work like it should work
in
almost
Mosaic.
Anywhere. Yeah. If Firefox 2 and up, Safari 3.2, 1 and up, Internet Explorer 6 and up, and Opera 10.6 and up. And then, as Mike said, it works in Mosaic. Mike guarantees that.
I guarantee
for you.
If it doesn't work, send me an email.
Right. So, yeah, so the cool thing is it just renders your little spinner for you, and you can specify like how wide you want each line to be, how many segments you want, space between them, you know, all these different little configurations to customize it as much to your preferences as possible. Probably not all the way, but a decent chunk of the way. So, and since it's SVG, it's not going to rape anybody's processors like Canvas would. I think it's cool. It's a good use of JavaScript.
Mm.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty useful.
Right?
Yeah, I use a similar jQuery plugin that doesn't do SVG or...
No, see? That's the problem.
VML is just, you know, an image, but this is much cooler.
I don't even want to cover the next story. I keep reading halfway through it and then reading a bunch of Google ads.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why they put Google ads in.
Like, in the middle of it, and they're not even, okay. Like, picture ads. They're text ads.
Right. Progfu, take your damn ads out of your article. You can put them before the article. You can put them after the article. You can put them in the midst of the comments because nobody that knows what they're doing ever reads comments. You can put them over on the sidebar. You can put them anywhere but in the middle of the text.
They
of
look
your
like
article.
The world's worst pull quotes.
You want to know the great thing, though? If you're using Safari, or if you're not, if you're using Safari, click the little reader button up in your address bar. If you're not using Safari, click the readability plugin or readability bookmark, and hey, no ads.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. So I reading it's annoying because of the damn ads, but I agree with what the doc with what the blog post says.
Okay. What does the blog post say?
Do you disagree with it, or what, you didn't?
No,
read
I read it.
So it says your code's not self-documenting. Everybody thinks that they write self-documenting code. I don't need to document my code because all my function names explain exactly what they do.
Okay.
Great. Awesome. But as soon as you go to extend it, now they suddenly don't name what they do. And unless you're like a refactoring god, which you're not, then now it's out of sync. It's no longer self-documenting. And... it's just a pain in the ass. So, document. That's basically all it's basically what's getting at is document this stuff.
Okay.
I'm in the bad habit of not documenting.
You're in the habit of not documenting. See, this is one of the best things about writing Python, is that documentation becomes useful because you can pull it up in the shell, like, to find out what the hell a function does while you're writing something in the shell to test it. So, like, everybody documents because it's useful that way.
But, yeah, I've been doing the Learn Python the Hard Way. Mm-hmm. I'm somewhere, like, in chapter, like, 35.
Learn Python, isn't that where they just throw you in a room with a snake and you have to fight it till the death?
Yes, pretty much.
Well, they start off with small ones, you know. First, it's like a gopher snake. And then, you know, you move it to like a coral.
Indiana Jones is in there to help you.
Well, but
he just runs around in a circle.
Yeah, he just runs around in a circle. And he like tosses you a hat every time.
Yeah, sure, document. I just don't give a damn. I mean, like, document when you know something's going to be confusing.
Well, this is mainly just to poke at the people that say they don't need to because their stuff's self-documenting. There's so many, like, we get a thread on Forest at least once every month about how do you document your code, right?
Yeah.
And I post the exact same thing every single time. It's something I read from Alex Gaynor, and I think it's, like, the most succinct way to do it. As soon as you feel like you're being clever, comment.
Yeah, and when you feel like you're being clever, but I swear to God, if you have a function that says, displays message to user, and then it says, print
you don't
variable,
comment,
and then I see a comment on
skip
there, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, skip that. That's great, you know. If you've got a line that all it does is return true and you put a comment above it that says returns true, you're going to have your programming license revoked. It's just what's going to happen. But, you know, everything other than that, every single class that you write should describe what the hell the class is for. Every method you write, like actual class method, not just some little one-off function that does some stupid thing, but an actual method that does real business logic, should be commented. At least at the top of the method, tell what the hell it does, what it expects, what kind of errors it throws, things like that.
I want someone who just puts comments in there like, this method makes you wonder what it does.
I have an exception that I add into several of my projects that is the Spanish Inquisition exception, and I just put that it should never be expected. Like, you can expect it. That's fine. You just really shouldn't. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's good advice. People are way too cocky about their code, and your code's not that good.
Dude,
I don't care. We could have Paul Irish on the show, and I'm going to tell him the same damn thing. He was in the IRC channel. That's why
you
he's on
are a lines. Liar. That is not Paul Irish.
It says Paul
so
Irish.
So what? Paul Irish has things to do. He's not going to sit around and talk about ButtBot.
Hey, you know what? It might be Paul Irish. Then again, it might not. You never know. I have things to do. I sit around and talk about ButtBot. That's because I like ButtBot. I'm one of the few in the
channel.
It's
because you're not
like
on a successful podcast like YayQuery.
Yeah, because we don't have anywhere near the listeners.
I still haven't heard one episode of YayQuery.
I love everybody on it, but God, I hate listening to it.
It's kind of like I hate listening to the WordPress podcast. The guys in there are so dry and dull, and I just want to shoot myself and them. But
yeah, I tried to listen to one episode of the YayQuery podcast,
too many ponies.
And I don't think I made it past the intro.
Too many ponies.
Man, you guys got to do a professional show like ours.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
So let's talk about this next one.
Duty.
This next one's cool. This is from
a ferret.
P2 Brussel. Oh. I wish GitHub had like real names on it. That'd be really handy. So this is the official online compendium for an O'Reilly book that's coming out soon called Mining the Social Web. So basically, these are all the code samples from the book. You can go get the book right now if you want in Safari Books Online, or you can go get the rough cut. And
what do you do when you're mining the social web? What does that mean?
So this is like for using APIs from like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and stuff like that to grab all sorts of social data and then use those to determine things about the people that you're gathering.
I'm not buying a goddamn book about how to do that. That's what every intro programming and web thing is. How to get stuff from Facebook, how to get stuff from Twitter. And
well,
nobody wants anything from LinkedIn.
That's why
LinkedIn gives you herpes. Oh,
recruiters do. Recruiters want shit from LinkedIn. I get
you
want
to make
every email I get from LinkedIn, I just immediately hit
yes.
delete.
Hey, we just saw your account. Would you like to make $95,000 a year?
I saw you on LinkedIn and thought you might be interested in this Rails job, even though Rails isn't mentioned anywhere in your profile. No, I'm not interested in your stupid Rails job. But no, this is cool. This is just the code, if that's all you want. And it'll give you at least some decent idea for how to do this stuff. It's aimed at intermediate to advanced Python programmers, but I guarantee you anything you read in here can be easily ported over to Ruby or probably even PHP.
Or Haskell.
Or Haskell. Yeah, maybe. Some Erlang.
Fortran,
COBOL, Pascal.
I know COBOL.
Basic.
Apparently Kyle on Gary's show last week was talking about Haskell for some reason.
He was. I listened to that yesterday. He talked about Haskell. He said Haskell had some momentum.
It has
and it
some
does.
Momentum. Right into the furnace.
Haskell's been making some waves this past year. Same with Scheme and
Lisp.
Like
how we're talking about like it's a team or a person or something. Like, no man, I tell you, it's got a good lineup,
well,
a good starting team. good starting batch.
There is a team behind it. Okay, so I talk about Vim
no,
a
don't.
Lot, in case you guys hadn't noticed. And one of the things that's really fun about Vim is that the commands don't look like commands when you just send them to somebody. Like QA3JYPJD Q2@AZZ.
I hate you.
Right? That doesn't make sense.
Yes.
That sounds like you're having a seizure.
A little bit, yeah. So, the cool thing is, we now have this little thing called Vimsplain, which is on GitHub. It's a little Python script you run, and you pass in that crazy-ass string I just sent you. And what it does is it breaks down what each of those commands does. Like QA records into a register named A. 3J moves the cursor down three lines. Cap Y yanks one line.
Word.
So on and so forth.
That's
right?
Pretty handy,
so,
I guess.
Yeah. If you're reading Vim stuff and all you keep seeing are these random gobbledygook strings.
If you're working with an asshole, then, that could be useful.
Yeah, if you're working with an asshole that won't tell you what to do, he just tells you what keys to press in. No. This is what you gotta push. CIW. Just keep doing CIW. You'll be fine. Then this is something handy for you to learn that.
That's kind of cool.
Or maybe you're writing like blog posts about Vim and you can't always remember what the things do. You just know that it works when you do it. So you could do this and get a nice explanation to put into your blog. Right?
Right.
That's what we'll say. All right, let's go on to the next one. Marco.org.
Polo.
Google's decreasing.
Marco.
Polo.
Polo. What?
Fish out of water. Google's decreasingly useful spam-filled web search.
I have not noticed this, but okay. I know how to search the web.
I know how to search the web as well, and I know that I get much better results on DuckDuckGo than I do Google when I'm searching for a programming issue. Have you tried DuckDuckGo?
I've seen it. The little thing is
cute.
No,
you don't do programming anyway anymore. All you do now is email people about, hey, your forest post isn't quite up to standards.
I'm going to cut you.
Is this true, Mike? Shame on you.
That's Mike's job now. He's not even a project manager.
No wonder you drink so much.
I'm doing MVP for $8.50.
For $8.50?
An hour?
Well, wait, Kyle already one-upped you, though. He's got the 3 hours
Two
of
hours
consultation
for $400. That's son
yeah,
of a bitch.
See?
No, I sent him that article. I was like, dude, isn't this cool? This guy's doing MVP for $1,000. He's like, yeah, man, I wish I should have done that. I was like, yeah, you still could. And then 5 minutes later, he's like, I'm doing this instead. And I was like, you ass.
Exactly.
I wish I was worth $200 an hour. To just talk to you.
Well, you can be if you just say that you are.
I at least hope he's giving these people like a back rub or something.
A back rub. We're not going to talk about what goes on under the desk.
Oh, God.
And yes, I mean that like it sounds. So, yeah. Let's get back over to this decreasingly useful spam-filled search. Now, Jeff Atwood is the guy that originally complained about this, which I don't think anybody's really surprised about, because isn't Atwood the guy behind Stack Overflow? Or is that Spolsky?
Know.
One of those two. Anyway, so basically the main problem is that whenever you search for something on Google, especially programming-related, a lot of what you get are mirrors of mailing lists. And when was the last time a mailing list was really useful to anyone, honestly?
Ah, shit. I mean, use the Google Groups mailing list for almost everything that I do.
And when do you actually get useful feedback on there? As opposed to Stack Overflow?
Tons, because the ones I go to, people, the creators usually respond. This is usually looking up information about gems for Ruby. So,
okay, I can
like,
see that.
Noonmaker, John Noonmaker usually responds a lot personally in there, things like that.
See, what you're using mailing lists for, I use IRC for. I just go to the channel that's for the Python project that I'm dealing with and ask. And unless it's the Django channel, I'll get useful help pretty quick. The Django channel is mainly aimed at like new people, and so the only way to get advanced help is to start bashing Django for not being able to do something, and then someone will tell you how it's done, and then that's the way you get the answer.
I love it.
So now you all know the thing. It works the exact same way, or at least it used to, in the Rails channels. It used to be that exact same
man. Rails sucks.
Could not get help, and then somebody helped you. It's amazing how that works. But no, like if you're using Haystack or you're using Solr, which is Java, not Python, or Django South or something like that, the channels for those are really great for help, and you can usually get feedback really quickly. And then the mailing lists for these same things aren't that useful. So mailing lists kind of suck in the Python world. Anyway,
I hate mailing lists.
Anyway, you get a lot of mirrors for mailing lists, and you get a lot of mirrors for Stack Overflow or server fault or whatever. Or you get a lot of what's annoying to me is you get a lot of people asking questions about something, and then there's like absolutely no answer to it.
Yeah, that happens.
Because all that they indexed was like maybe like the first message in the mailing list, or they don't index responses.
But I don't even see it. I see those the same way as ads. Like I come across those all the time, but if I see it's from a mailing list and I see it's not from, you know, a known, you know, like Google Groups or something, I'm like, oh, okay, so that's just a mirror. I don't even click it. It doesn't even occur to me.
Right, but the point is, you're seeing that as an ad. You're seeing it as effectively as spam. Yeah. And it's in all the Google results, and it shouldn't be there. Google should be smart enough not to have those. So this is why people are starting to use things like Blecko for non-technical searches and DuckDuckGo for technical searches, because they have blacklists that eliminate these sites that are just reposts of useful sites. Right?
What happens if, it's a mirror for Tumblr? You're going to need that.
No, these aren't mirrors like reposting the content just in case the server goes down and redirecting you to the real server if it's up. These are mirrors as in they've got a screen scraper reading Stack Overflow and it clicks on every question, copies the answers, and pastes it to our own site.
Hey. Well, stop doing that, guys.
And then half of them, all you get is the first question, and you have to click a link to go to the Stack Overflow thread.
you gotta go sign up at a porn site and find the third word that's mentioned in the welcome.
And then you have to take advantage of like the free checks offer, and then you know.
They should just put Experts Exchange results from the very top.
So long as they immediately scroll to the bottom of the page.
Yes.
They fixed that, didn't they? I think they did. I think they finally
fixed it. What, Experts Exchange?
Yeah, I think they finally fixed it to where you couldn't.
I don't know.
Like,
I can never see
results. I
don't have an account.
Well, right. They used to have a thing where even without an account, if you scrolled all the way to the bottom, you could see all the answers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like a Firefox. It was like a Firefox and Safari bug. Apparently in IE, you couldn't see the answers. But in like any other browser, you scroll to the bottom and there were the answers.
Yeah, they must have fixed that quick.
It worked for years. But yeah, no, I like Marco has a good post in his blog here, and even if we're not talking about all that's in here, I think we definitely need to either stop using Google until they eliminate these like SEO farms, or
just be searching Forest.
Just search on Forest. Just come ask in the Forest channel, and somebody in there will probably find it for you. All right, so we've talked about Diaxon before, who's one guy but keeps talking about himself like it's multiple people. So we're going to say the people over at Diaxon have come up with a pretty cool little flexible nav here. I like this. This is nice.
A little bit.
This is handy. I mean, you're not going to use this on like Forest, right? But if you're making some little website for your new iPhone app or your new Mac App Store app,
if you've got mad illustration skills. If you're doing this with shitty icons, I don't care.
No. You got to have some good icons, like the four that they
stole from Panic. Got from Panic.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Transmit and Transmission are from Panic. Is AppZapper from Panic?
I don't think AppZapper is. I have AppZapper.
I don't think Courier is either. No, wait. Transmission isn't either. Only Transmit's from Panic.
Yeah.
Transmission and AppZapper and Courier are all from other places. Anyway, they're all nice icons, right? We'll just leave it at that. And it's a nice little CSS menu.
It's cool. It's not bad. I like it. Yeah.
Those guys do good work. All right, so we kind of talked about those earlier. Mike mentioned it, trying to be all snide. LearnYouSomeErlang.com. Learn you some Erlang for great good. Basically, what this is a little how to learn Erlang guide, somewhat in the same vein as Why the Lucky Stiffs. What was the Chunky Bacon book?
Why's
Poignant Guide to Ruby. Yeah, the Poignant Guide to Ruby. And it's also somewhat in the vein.
Which I was never able to read.
Yeah, I can't remember. Too many goddamn foxes. I laughed at the foxes and the Chunky Bacon, but.
Just didn't care. I
couldn't read the whole thing. Yeah.
No wonder you're not a programmer anymore.
Look here. I need something built. I need a shed.
For your bike?
Why don't you go ask a Mexican down the street because you're talking to Ecuadorian here.
You need a shed for your bike. Is that it? And you go paint your bike shed? No, so these are cool. They're both like very basic beginner intros to Erlang and Haskell, both of which are awesome programming languages if you have use for them. Erlang is great for concurrency. It's basically the grown-up version of Node.js, and Haskell is a functional programming language, so you'd be using that for more accounting, scientific-type programming, and less for Facebook to describe that more easily. Yeah. No, Erlang is pretty cool. Erlang is the power behind CouchDB.
So, okay.
If you've used CouchDB or you've used RabbitMQ, then you have installed Erlang, because you have to have it installed for both of those to work. You probably haven't programmed anything in it. It looks a decent amount like Python.
I was just looking at that.
Yeah, the only weird thing is that statements end in a period, which as a Python programmer I don't like, because that's just weird.
You guys are weird, man.
Why the hell do you need something to end the line? Just end the line. Press return. Be done with it. Right? Right. And then our next one here is learnyouahaskell.com.
You guess what that's about.
Learn you a Haskell for great good. Same idea as Erlang, only it's Haskell.
I need something that's learn Erlang. You some lolcats.
Learn you some lolcats? I don't think you really have to learn lolcats. I think it just kind of works, doesn't it?
You still have to know how, you know,
well, there
create
is,
a function. And
there is, let's see, is it still up? Lolcode.org? Oh, it's not there anymore. Was it .com? I'm looking for
Ken has job. No. Bad kitty.
It's lolcode.com.
It is. Lolcode.com. That's it. And that'll teach you how to program in lolcode. And there are interpreters for lolcode for most languages out there. I know there's one for Ruby. I know there's one for Python. I know there's one for PHP. So you can write your Ruby, your PHP, or your Python in lolcode and then cross-process it over into the original programming language.
I wonder if it has a web framework yet.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I want to use that to make a magnificent website, just so I could then claim to people like, no, it's enterprise ready. It's good to go. We have this.
Yeah, hey, let's see. There's LolPython. There's a .NET compiler. There's a Perl interpreter for it. There's a PHP processor for it. A Java runtime for it. A Java interpreter for it. A Lua translator. Flex and Bison. What else we got here? There's a Ruby one, which is LMAO. LMAO makes acronym. Oh, my God. There's a JavaScript implementation. You know. There's a Vim syntax highlighter. I need to get that. And a TextMate bundle.
Nice.
So, it looks like pretty much anything you want.
You should write the Forest podcast in lolcode.
We should write Forest in lolcode.
Yeah, so we can... Fire
start
Zach.
Somewhere small, you know.
I bet Zach can learn it. You give him a month or two, he can learn to write lolcode. He writes PHP already.
And it's not too far off. Oh.
Yeah. This is pretty self-explanatory. I think he could do it. Don't you guys? You guys don't have any
have
faith in
faith.
Zach that he can
mad
learn some
faith.
Lolcode?
I don't know Zach that well. I can't put all my eggs in one basket with him.
Yeah, he's bald. 456 Berea Street. I thought this was a good bit of advice.
From Berea Street?
And really, I only read the title. Yeah. Only use M's for the total width of M-based layouts. So basically the idea is if you're going to have an M-based layout, which is cool, your layout's going to scale based on font size. You only want to do that for the total width of the layout. Everything below that you would want to be done in pixels, or I suppose percentage points. Mainly that would be because then the pixels and percentage would scale based with the M's. You wouldn't have to worry about it, except in like IE5. Yeah, column widths are done in percentages. So that way everything stays nice and appropriate. You don't have to do any sort of weird math with your M's.
Yeah, but who wants to write code with M's?
Yeah, this is not 2001. I'm not using M's anymore.
I don't know why they don't just do pixel-based.
I hate M's. I hate M's.
It also depends on what your interface is. If you're doing something that's very text-heavy, it makes sense to do M-based because your text size is what determines if something fits into a container or not.
Look, I don't need your smart alecky responses.
Well, I just think that with PageZoom, you know, in and like the other one out, there's no point in M-based sizes anymore. I don't know. That's just my thought.
Yeah, and responsive web design.
Yeah. You know what? It doesn't matter. It's good advice. If you're dumb enough to be using M-based designs...
Please send all hate mail to
podcast at forest.com. I don't ever read.
Just tweet him.
All right. Paras Chopra, and I really hope he's not related to that other Chopra, put up a little blog post here. Sorry, your cool web app is probably not
going
to make money.
I'm going to be a millionaire.
No, this is he's actually
going to be
very
successful.
Right here. All these people that make a little web app that scratches their own particular itch, but it's just kind of their itch, right? Like, I need something that will turn all my pictures into pictures of me with cat heads.
I need something that will produce a podcast.
Right. Well, see, the podcast, that doesn't really work. We're talking about stupid little apps, things that just fit your own little niche. Like, I need an app that turns every occurrence of the word mic.
Right,
into
I got it.
Button.
So you need an app where you can put just a bunch of facts about yourself. Like, that's retarded.
Right. That's not going to make you a lot of money. It's really not likely to. As much as I love Facto.me, and he may sell this for a decent amount of money, it probably wouldn't be a residual income.
Going to sell the Tap Touch Click.
He could put ads on it, and I suppose he could charge people to have an account, but... Yeah, are people really going to do that? They could just post the same damn thing.
No,
you're going to have
the Coke in the Snapple account that's going to be paying to be in there.
The corporate accounts could make money on it, but I don't know. Still,
anyway,
it has to be proven. So anyway, what the dude is advocating is that if you really want to make money with your web app, the way that he feels you should go about it is the market first approach. You find an industry where people are making money. You find something that your app can do that other apps in that industry won't do. Ideally, you're solving a pain point that one of the top three solutions doesn't solve.
Right.
Right? And then you make your app, you market it, you refine it, you monetize it, and then you get all the other little features that you could have in there, and then you can basically make yourself be a market
Pimply,
leader that way.
The hoe tracker.
And you're going to make a lot of money. Right. Well, I mean, he talks about like the survey industry, right? Surveys. Amazingly boring. You fill out a bunch of questions, you send them to X number of customers or clients, they fill them out, and you get back a chart of the answers.
Right.
Right? SurveyMonkey makes $45
million.
God damn!
I mean, yay.
But think about it. That is like the most boring-ass industry there is. I mean, Chris and I implemented polls on an app that we're both working on, a project we're both working on. I think it took us a day to implement polling. You know, you get a question, you get X number of answers, and then we chart how many people answered which answer. Took a day and a half maybe, and it's all Redis. We're not going to make $45 million a year on it, but it's not hard. This is easy stuff to do. But they were one of the first ones in there. They do it really well. It's easy to do on SurveyMonkey. They're making a lot of money on it. You've got companies like Woofoo that are out there doing the exact same thing. I guarantee you they're making a lot of money. They do more than just surveys, but still, it's not something hard. Right?
That's what she said.
Hopefully not. All right, the Brooks Review.
Yeah,
did you read
this
one, Mike? Thoughts? So you are a bit bland.
I think there's a difference between bland and as good as something can get. I don't need your website to be bright pink and swirling all about. Right?
No, I don't believe that's what he's...
Well, then I'm always just wrong.
So we'll give a little bit of a rundown real quick.
It seemed like he changed the stuff on his site, and people said, why are you changing it from like having a serif font and things like that? Because we felt that that was more of your whatever.
Right. Well, see, no, I agree. That's stupid. That's really dumb, right? I don't think that really matters. So long as you can still read it, great. And that is what he's talking about, people doing this. People that either turn every site or turn whatever their favorite site is into what they think is the ideal for it instead of letting it be what it is. I think if site is readable, you should leave it the hell alone, right? He talks about Daring Fireball. I think Daring Fireball is readable. You should leave it the hell alone. Don't mess with it. But if you're talking about some site that, like you said, is bright, swirling pink, then yes, use a custom CSS style sheet.
If I'm reading more than one thing, then every goddamn thing I better look the same with good typography and stuff like that. I don't care that you spent 11 hours making this, you know, special area here where you can't tell that it's not a real shadow and it comes from the left and there's a specific glow on it. I don't give a fuck. I want to read what your story's about and move on. You know what? Good. You're a great designer. I don't care. You wrote an article. I didn't come to look at your site in a gallery.
Okay. Any more rant and saved up inside?
Yeah. Down with the emperor. I don't know.
Kill Whitey. Is that it? No, not this time. I don't know. I mean, I can see the argument that we are making things a little bland. But I do most of my reading inside Reader, right. So I
like,
guess it doesn't
like,
really matter.
Oh, like, are your feelings hurt that I didn't look at the way your site you wanted it to be? Too bad.
Well, and I guess to some degree this also kind of goes to the people that are complaining about running, like, you know, oh, you're running ad blocker. You can't see my website because you're not going
to
let these
ads. Well, then
ads
I guess you
load.
Need to find a better way to make money.
Speaking of, shouldn't we have ads?
Yeah, but if your ads are making money, then it doesn't matter. But if your ads aren't making money, then you have a monetization problem. You have a business plan error.
Yeah. You should get people to give you money for something other than looking at your site.
Cocaine.
I agree. That's the way I feel, too. That's why I have a little donate button on my
How does that work out for you?
Because it's like...
When's the time you get some new glasses?
I got like $5 on it. So nobody's getting new glasses, but I can buy a beer or two.
As long as you share it with the rest of the family. Right?
No. So, speaking of a little bit of money, Web Faction...
7.
They turned 7 today. 7. It's a long time.
What you don't know is Web Faction was actually written by a dog, and it's only a year old.
I don't even know what Web Faction really is.
Web Faction is probably the best of the shared web hosts that are out there. Most of their stuff is still done manually, so you're not dealing with like 40,000 users on a single server like you would with DreamHost or MediaTemple, where stuff is set up automatically through a script. They offer an amazing amount of support for Ruby and Python stuff. In fact, they originally started off as pythonhosting.com, where it was just Python stuff. I use them actually for hosting a PHP site. But regardless of that, they are an awesome Python host, and they do a lot of Ruby hosting as well, a lot of Rails stuff. Anyway, the cool thing is, from today on, they have updated their four
it's
shared hosting
free.
Plans.
Oh.
No. but you get 100 gigabytes of storage, which is pretty impressive for a shared hosting plan. That's pretty impressive. If you're an existing customer, you can upgrade to the new massive one, but you have to deal with having all your data, with moving all your data.
I just saw a tweet that said it would be nice if someone made a forest-like site for developers.
You should build it in low-cat.
Because, you know, forest doesn't... For people who aren't designers, right? But no, I mean, you really can't beat if you pay for 5 years, it's $5.50 a month for 100 gigabytes of storage. If all you fucking do is stick shit onto your 100 gigabytes of storage, that's less than you're going to pay for S3.
Yeah, that's pretty good price.
I feel like, you know, Amazon's going to be around. I don't know these people, these crazy people.
Amazon is going to be around, but, you know, then they're in charge of all your data.
Oh, man, you got to be unhooked.
They're going to use that. Yeah, see? They're going to use that to, like,
what you need is a flock of carrier pigeons, each one with a thumb drive attached to its foot.
Hmm. What about swallows? Would that work better? African or European?
African,
but they're not migratory. You haven't watched that movie enough. All right, and this last one came from Manny. What's this last one about, Manny?
Which one did I send
you? You contributed to the show, man. What's this about?
Which one?
Language.
Which one?
Language.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Language!
This is actually kind of cool. If anybody doesn't have Calvetica or Dalvetica, they're actually really cool apps. They're like $2 each on the iPhone app store. And they're very minimalistic. That's why they're used like the Helvetic tagline. But no, they recently released this application on Heroku where it allows people to go in and translate line by line their English application into other languages.
It's really cool.
And it has like, it has stats on the different languages that they're asking for and how, you know, the percentage of translations done. And it's actually really cool. And I think they're going to release it for other people to use on their own applications. So, yeah, it's really cool, I thought.
I can see this being paid for. Quickly, remake this.
I think so.
And then,
well, it's just a bunch of strings.
And then send it over to what's his name? Chopa.
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, Mike could add a translation, and then, you know, I could add one, and Kent could be like, no, that's stupid. That's not proper English, because these guys are not white. And you can vote our translations down.
You got to put it into your Klingon, though.
Nobody asked for Ebonics in Spanglish.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. Right now, obviously, it's just for
cover. McDonald's has a website entitled 365 Black, which is McDonald's black people. It's awful. It's so bad. What the hell is this?
That's
what? Wait, I thought this site was about coffee.
365 Black. What is 365 Black? This could be you. Men of McCafe.
365 Brown.
Well, they probably don't have 365 yellow or 365 red either. So,
wait,
are you being oppressed? Red Native Americans, right?
They don't eat McDonald's. Who are you kidding?
What was that video you sent me the other day, Mike? It was like some British game show, and the guy asked the question, "What do we usually mean when we say that someone is yellow?"
Right. Chinese.
Chinese.
No, I'm sorry. We were looking scared.
Well. And then the Asian kid says a coward, and the guy's like, yeah,
nice.
Which that was awesome.
Yes.
All right. So on this racist note, we should probably
you guys
end
are
the
not
going
to hear half of this episode because so many things are going to be removed.
Podcast at Forrest. Don't you remove any of this? Podcast at Forrest.com, ForrestPodcast.com, and we are Forrest Podcast on both Twitter and Facto.
Find me on Forrest.me/Mike because I'm cool and I have things you don't.
And I'm also on Forrest.me/KennethLove.
He wasn't supposed to, but he's
yeah. Hey, Kyle sent it to me yesterday.
I know, it's the same email.
Say, man?
I want a Forrest.me.
He knows how to keep his people happy.
What do I have to do to get a Forrest.me?
Well, you gotta go visit.
You gotta go talk to him. It's like going to see the Don.
Where does he live?
You gotta go talk. You probably won't say much. Your mouth will be full. But.
Oh.
Bye, everybody.
Toodaloo.
Bye.